Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today it's Friday. It's August 28th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Our guest today, Assembly Member Nader Sayers, unfortunately will not be able to join us. We've got a notice from his office at around 7 o'clock this morning. So it's a shame, and hopefully we'll be able to catch him on the next week. So he has to attend to business. That's what it is when you're an assembly member. So the most important thing is to do what's necessary for the public interest. Okay, so we're going to be able to discuss other things. He was our only guest today, because usually we spend over an hour discussing things on Fridays. So today we're going to be doing a lot of other different things. So the first thing we're going to talk about is predominantly local. Yonkers Republican City Committee Chair Justin Tubiolo is going to be departing, and he will be succeeded by John Larkin. Well, Yonkers Republican City Committee Chair Justin Tubiolo has decided to depart the helm after many years. The vote is expected to take place tomorrow, and the designee to take the helm will be none other than former Yonkers City Council Majority Leader and present Planning Board member John Larkin. So the Yonkers Tribune wishes him success at the helm. Very exciting to see him back in the forefront. So he'll be not always in the front of the room, but he'll definitely be there, the power behind the power. So very, very interesting. And he probably will do very well in resuscitating the Republican perspective. So very challenging. And we've got some slightly disturbing news. I think it's really quite disturbing. Lord & Taylors has filed for bankruptcy 13 protection, bankruptcy protection. Lord & Taylor will close all its stores. And Lord & Taylor was acquired last year by the clothing rental startup, a company called La Tote. And like Lord & Taylor, La Tote also filed for Chapter 11, protection from their creditors in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. And Lord & Taylor has closed the Eastchester, New York, and the Ridgehill store in Yonkers, New York, locally. An additional 36 stores are also closed throughout the nation. Lord & Taylor's, if you want to know, was acquired last year by the clothing rental startup La Tote. Store La Tab filed earlier this year. Ann Taylor, Brooks Brothers, Neiman Marcus, J. Crew, J.C. Penney, among others, also filed for bankruptcy protection. We'll see if these companies can survive. It's a very, very difficult time. And we must also understand that even before COVID-19, the retail stores, such as the ones we just mentioned, have been under assault financially, and they have not been able to weather the storm as they probably had one time did. So this is a new era, that's for sure, that's coming about. And this is something we're going to have to deal with. There are going to be a lot of ramifications for such firms being out of business. And it's an upheaval. That's really what it is. It really boils down to just that. Now, a couple of other local things that was very interesting. New York's finest are backing up an assemblyman by the name of Kevin Byrne for re-election. He's based out of Somers, New York. And so adding to an already impressive list of endorsements, New York City's finest has made it official that they have endorsed Assemblyman Kevin M. Byrne in his bid for re-election to represent the 94th Assembly District. In a letter to Assemblyman Byrne, announcing the endorsement, New York City PBA President Pat Lynch wrote, quote, "On behalf of the Police Benevolence Association of the City of New York, it is my pleasure to announce our endorsement of your re-election to the New York State Assembly in the 94th Assembly District. Lynch continued, quote, "Your commitment to addressing the issues affecting the New York City police officers as well is well recognized, and it is an honor to have you representing our members in the Assembly. We look forward to working with you towards our shared goal of a stronger, safer New York." So Assemblyman Byrne thanked Lynch and his members, saying, quote, "I've been honored to run with the support of New York City's finest each election, and I'm proud to do so again." Byrne had continued, "Many of their members live within our community and commute down to the Big Apple, where they are now facing more challenges than any other time in recent memory. I will not stop advocating for them and those they protect and serve." According to the PBA's website, the Police Benevolent Association of the City of New York is the largest municipal police union in the world. The New York City PBA represents the approximately 24,000 sworn NYPD members who hold the rank of police officer and wear a silver shield like the one that's posted on our website. The frontline office police officers in radio cars and on foot posts in your neighborhood, as well as those in specialized units and administrative division throughout the world. Well, the PBA of New York City endorsement adds to a long list of first responder organizations supporting Assemblyman Byrne in his bid for re-election. So very, very encouraging, to say the least. So that's a lot of very, very strong support, which is really exceptional. Now, let's look at some other things that you may find of interest. Bear with me a moment. I think we spoke to you about this. I'm not quite sure if we did. No, I think we must have, because I'm talking about the police department that had not yet issued notice of the shooting of Chaz Mitchell on Oak Street and Elm Street. But the Yonkers Police Department communications director did issue a statement yesterday saying they were looking into it, even though we reported about it 2 days before. So at least they're looking into it. They haven't said much more than we have. I think we actually said so much more than they did. So anyway, that's the way it goes. One other thing I wanted to speak to you about. Bear with me a moment. I think that we've covered the local stuff. Bear with me one more second. Just want to make sure that I have. I think that's the case. So we're going to find out exactly what the Board of Education, Board of Trustees, and what the Yonkers Board of Education is doing. There are financial cutbacks, unbelievably so. And certainly the city of Yonkers is going to cut back more staffing. And we'll get an accounting, hopefully, by next week of what's really going on, because it's all coming out in spurts and it's not really solidified, and there isn't an exact, telling, and so much is behind the scenes that people are not talking. It's really outrageous. But whatever, that's the conduct of the Yonkers Board of Education, Board of Trustees, as well as its superintendent of school. So everyone's supposed to be in the dark until they figure out what they're going to do, and they're constantly trying to figure out what's the best way of how the optics will look. Well, so far, their optics really look very bad. All right, so I think that from the local scene, and so what we're going to do is we're now going to move on to other issues, and 1 second. Bear with me a moment here. All right. One thing that's really very disturbing, Japan's longest-serving prime minister Shinzo Abe has announced resignation for health reasons. I never realized he was so ill. Shinzo Abe, Japan's longest-serving prime minister, announced on Friday he will resign over health problems in a bombshell development that kicks off a leadership contest in the world's third largest economy. I cannot continue being prime minister if I do not have the confidence that I can carry out the job entrusted to me by the people, Abe, who is 65, told a news conference as he announced his decision to step down. He said he wanted to avoid a political vacuum as the country copes with COVID-19. Quote, I apologize from the bottom of my heart that despite all of the support from the Japanese people, I am leaving the post with one full year left in my term, Abe said, at times blinking back tears and his voice choking up. In a country once known for its short-tenured prime ministers, Abe's departure marks the end of an unusual era of stability that saw Shinzo Abe strike up strong ties with President Donald Trump, even as Abe's nationalism riled the Koreas and China. While he pulled Japan out of recession, the economy has been battered anew by the coronavirus pandemic, and he has failed to achieve his cherished goal to formally rewrite the U.S.-drafted pacifist constitution because of poor public support. Well, Abe is a political blue blood who was groomed to follow in the footsteps of his grandfather, former Prime Minister Nobusuke Kishi, and his political rhetoric often focused on making Japan a normal and beautiful nation with a stronger military and bigger role in international affairs. Concerns about Abe's chronic health issues simmering since earlier this summer intensified this month when he visited a Tokyo hospital 2 weeks in a row for unspecified health checkups. Abe, whose term was to end in September of 2021, is expected to stay on until a new party leader is elected and formally approved by the parliament. Abe became Japan's youngest prime minister in 2006 at the age of 52. But his nationalistic first stint abruptly ended in disappointment a year later because of his health. In December of 2012, Abe returned to power, prioritizing economic measures over his nationalist agenda. He won six national elections and built a rock-solid grip on power, bolstering Japan's defense role and capability and its security alliance with the United States. He also stepped up patriotic education at schools and raised Japan's international profile. In reaction to the shock resignation news, British Prime Minister Boris Yeltsin praised Abe's record, quote, at Abe Shinzo has achieved great things as Prime Minister of Japan for his country and the world, Johnson said on Twitter. Quote, under his stewardship, the United Kingdom-Japan relationship has gone from strength to strength in trade, defense, and our cultural links. Thank you for all your years of service, and I wish you good health. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, meanwhile, expressed her regrets, quote unquote, about Abe's resignation and spoke fondly of the rapport between them. Merkel said she and her fellow veteran leader in the group of seven industrialized nations had a, quote, shared foundation of values, end quote. Continuing, she says, I, of course, regret his resignation and wish him all the best for his health. She told reporters, we always worked very, very well together. He was always someone who committed himself to the fight for multilateralism. Kremlin also had warm words for the departing Abe on Friday. Shinzo Abe really made an invaluable contribution to the development of bilateral Russian-Japanese relations, President Vladimir Putin's spokesman Dmitry Peskov told Russian news agencies. Well, Abe is the longest-serving prime minister. Abe on Monday became Japan's longest-serving prime minister by consecutive days in office, eclipsing the record of Eisaku Sato, his great-uncle, 2,798 days from 1964 to 1972. but his second hospital visit on Monday accelerated speculation and political maneuvering toward a post-Abe regime. Abe has acknowledged having ulcerative colitis since he was a teenager and has said the condition was controlled with treatment. He has not made clear if that condition is related to his recent health issues or hospital issues and visits. Ulcerative colitis causes inflammation and sometimes polyps in the bowels. And people with the condition can have a normal life expectancy, but serious cases can involve life-threatening complications. After his recent hospital visits were reported, top officials from Abe's cabinet and the ruling party said Abe was overworked and badly needed rest. His health concerns added to speculation that Abe's days in office were numbered. His support ratings were already at their lowest level due to his handling of the coronavirus pandemic and its severe impact on the economy, on top of a stream of political scandals. There are a slew of politicians eager to replace Abe. Shigeru Ishiba, a 63-year-old hawkish former defense minister and Abe's arch rival, is a favorite to be the next leader in media surveys, though he is less popular within the ruling party. A low-key former foreign minister, Fumio Kishida, defense minister Taro Kono, chief cabinet secretary Yoshihide Suga, and Economic Revitalization Minister Yasutoshi Nishimura, who is in charge of coronavirus measures, are widely speculated in Japanese media as potential successors. Abe, who repeatedly faced public criticism for his handling of the coronavirus outbreak, was often upstaged by Tokyo Governor Yuriko Koike, a former ruling party conservative who's seen as a potential prime minister candidate by some, but she would have to first be elected to parliament to be in the running for the top job. The end of Abe's scandal-laden first stint as prime minister was the beginning of 6 years of annual leadership change, remembered as an era of revolving-door politics that lacked stability and long-term policy. When he returned to office in 2012, Abe vowed to revitalize the nation and get its economy out of its deflationary doldrums, and his Abenomics formula, which combines fiscal stimulus, monetary easing, and structural reforms. Perhaps Abe's biggest failure was his inability to fulfill a long-cherished goal of his grandfather to formally rewrite the U.S. drafted pacifist constitution. Abe and his ultra-conservative supporters see the U.S.-drafted Constitution as a humiliating legacy of Japan's World War II defeat. He was also unable to achieve his goal of settling several unfinished wartime legacies, including normalizing ties with North Korea, settling island disputes with neighbors, and signing a peace treaty with Russia. A very, very compelling individual. And he will be missed. His legacy is literally entrenched in Japanese history. Just absolutely stellar performance on so many levels, even though there were some issues, of course, as we noted in this report. One second. And let's look at what happened a little bit closer to home. Trump closes the Republican convention with defiant White House campaign speech, facing a national moment fraught with racial turmoil and a deadly pandemic. President Donald Trump accepted his party's renomination on a massive White House South Lawn stage Thursday night, boasting of helping African Americans and defying his own administration pandemic guidelines to address a tightly packed, largely maskless crowd. As troubles churned outside the gates, Trump painted an optimistic vision of America's future, including an eventual triumph over the coronavirus pandemic that has killed more than 175,000 people, left millions unemployed, and rewritten the rules of society. But that brighter horizon can only be secured, Trump asserted if he defeats Democrat Joe Biden. We have spent the last 4 years reversing the damage Joe Biden inflicted over the last 47 years, Trump said, presenting himself as the last barrier protecting an American way of life under siege from radical forces. Trump declared that, quote, Joe Biden and his party repeatedly assailed America as a land of racial, economic, and social injustice. So tonight I ask you a very simple question. How can the Democratic Party ask to lead our country when it spends so much time tearing down our country? Trump said. In the left's backward view, they do not see America as the most free, just, and exceptional nation on earth. Instead, they see a wicked nation that must be punished for its sins. As his speech brought the scaled-back Republican National Convention to a close, Trump's incendiary rhetoric risked inflaming a divided nation, reeling from a series of calamities, including the pandemic, a major hurricane that slammed into the Gulf Coast, and nights of racial unrest and violence after Jacob Blake, a black man, was shot by a white Wisconsin police officer. He was introduced by his daughter Ivanka, an influential White House advisor who portrays the famously bombastic Trump as someone who has shaken up Washington with little record for norms or niceties. Dad, people attack you for being unconventional, but I love you for being real, and I respect you for being effective, she said. The president spoke from a setting that was both familiar and controversial. By traditional and regulation to not use the White House for purely political events, the huge stage was set up outside the executive mansion, dwarfing the trappings of some of the most important moments of past presidencies. Speaker's stand was flanked by dozens of American flags and two big video screens. Trying to run as an insurgent as well as an incumbent, Trump rarely includes calls for unity, even in a time of national uncertainty. He has repeatedly, if not always effectively, tried to portray Biden, who is considered a moderate Democrat, as a tool of the radical left. Fringe forces, he has claimed, don't love their country. Well, the Republicans hope that the violence that has erupted in Kenosha, so some people say, and some other American cities, is to be blamed on Democratic government and mayors. Vice President Mike Pence on Wednesday said that Americans wouldn't be safe in Joe Biden's America. And that drew a stern rebuke from his predecessor in the Post. Well, the problem we have right now is that we are in Donald Trump's America, said Biden on MSNBC. He views this as a political benefit to him. He's rooting for more violence, not less. He's pouring gasoline on the fire. Both parties are watching with uncertainty and developments, the developments in Wisconsin and cities across the nation, with Republicans leaning hard on support for law and order, with no words offered for black victims of police violence, while falsely claiming that Biden has not condemned the lawlessness. And Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal attorney and New York City's former mayor, declared that Democrats' quote silence was so deafening that it reveals an acceptance of this violence because they will accept anything they hope will defeat President Donald Trump. And though some of the speakers, unlike on previous nights, offered notes of sympathy to the families of black men killed by police, Giuliani also took aim at the Black Lives Matter movement, suggesting that it, along with Antifa, was part of the extremist voice pushing Biden to, quote, execute their pro-criminal, anti-police policies, and had hijacked the protests into vicious, brutal riots. Along with Biden, running mate Kamala Harris offered a counter-programming for Trump's primetime speech. She delivered a speech a half mile from the White House, declaring Donald Trump has failed at the most basic and important job of a president of the United States. He failed to protect the American people plain and simple. Some demonstrations took to Washington streets on Thursday night ahead of a march planned on for the next day. New fencing set up along the White House perimeter was to keep the protesters at bay, but some of their shouts and car horns were clearly audible in the South Lawn, where more than 1,500 people gathered. Soon after Trump began talking, the horns and sirens, which came through occasionally to the millions watching at home, caused some people in the last row to turn around and look for the source of the disturbance. Those chants, coming from masked faces, intruded on another illusion that the Republicans have spent a week trying to create, that the pandemic is largely a thing of the past. The rows of chairs on the lawn were tightly packed, inches apart. Protective masks were not required, and COVID-19 tests were not to be administered to everyone. But Trump, who has defended his handling of the pandemic, touted an expansion of rapid coronavirus testing. The White House announced Thursday that it had struck a $750 million deal to acquire 150 million tests from Abbott Laboratories to be deployed in nursing homes, schools, and other areas with populations at high risk. Most of the convention has been aimed at former Trump supporters or non-voters and has tried to drive up negative impressions of Biden so that some of his possible backers stay home. Many of the messages were aimed squarely at seniors and suburban women. Among the more emotional moments, a testimony from Alice Marie Johnson, who was granted clemency from her life sentence on nonviolence drug charges, and from Carl and Marsha Mueller, whose daughter Kayla was killed while being held in Syria by Islamic State militants during the Obama administration. "Kayla should be here," said Carl Mueller. "If Donald Trump was president when Kayla was captured, she would be here today." 4 years ago, Trump declared in his acceptance speech that "I alone can fix the nation's woes," but he has found himself asking voters for another term at the nadir of his presidency amid a devastating pandemic, crushing unemployment, and real uncertainties about schools and business reopening, but there's a lot of positive as well. Another 1 million people filed for unemployment benefits last week in numbers released on Thursday, and the U.S. economy shrank to an alarming annual rate of 31.7% during the April-June quarter at its struggle under the weight of the spiral epidemic. It was the sharpest quarterly drop on record. But it seems that it is resurging slowly, but it is resurging. So we're never sure, and it's hard to tell. Just very, very hard to tell. Now, let's just see what else is going on, which you may find interesting. Lebanon, always in the news. Lebanese presidency is going to convene consultations on Monday to pick a new prime minister. The Lebanese presidency will convene consultations with paramilitary blocs on Monday to designate a new prime minister, the presidency said, after the government quit earlier this month following the catastrophic explosion at Beirut port. Well, Lebanon's fractious sectarian parties have so far failed to agree on who should lead the next government. President Michel Aoun is required to designate the candidates with the greatest level of support among ministers of parliament. The post of prime minister must go to a Sunni Muslim in the Lebanese sectarian system. It was not immediately clear who would emerge with the biggest support among ministers of parliament. Saad al-Hariri, who is so far the only serious name floated for the post to replace Hassan Diab, who continues in a caretaker capacity until the new government is agreed to. But Hariri said earlier this week he was not a candidate after several major parties said they did not support his return to the job. Consultations will take place the day before French President Emmanuel Macron visits Beirut as Paris presses Lebanese leaders take action to save the country from a destabilizing financial crisis. The Iran-backed Shiite Hezbollah and its Shiite ally, the Amal movement, want Hariri to be prime minister again, but Hezbollah's main Christian ally, the Free Patriotic Movement, founded by oppose his candidacy. Groups at the other end of the spectrum, notably the Christian Lebanese Forces Party and Druze leader Walid Jumblat, also do not support Hariri's return to the job. So we'll see what happens. What a mess that place is. Let's look at what happened in Kenosha. The Illinois teen was charged over a deadly shooting of the Kenosha protesters. The prosecutors on Thursday charged 17-year-old from Illinois in the fatal shooting of two protesters and the wounding of a third in Kenosha, Wisconsin, during a night of unrest following the weekend police shooting of Jacob Blake. The Kyle Rittenhouse faced charges of first-degree intentional homicide, one count of first-degree reckless homicide, one count of attempted first-degree intentional homicide, and two counts of first-degree reckless endangerment. He would face a mandatory life sentence if convicted of first-degree intentional homicide, the most serious crime in Wisconsin. The shootings last Tuesday, largely caught on cell phone video and posted online, and the shooting by police Sunday of Blake, a 29-year-old black father of six, who was left paralyzed from the waist down, made Kenosha the latest focal point in the fight against racial injustice that has gripped the country since the May 25 death of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody. The two men killed were Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, of Kenosha, and Anthony Huber, 26, of Silver Lake, about 15 miles west of the city. Third man injured, Gage Grosskreutz, 26, of West Allis, about 30 miles northwest of Kenosha, is recovering after surgery. And Bethany Krevenston, another activist, she said that Grosskreutz was volunteering as a medic when he was shot and called him a hero. Unbelievable. Grosskreutz is a German word. It means groß is big or great, and Kreutz is the cross. So I guess it really stands for the Great Cross. That's probably the translation of it. But what a beautiful name. Certainly in German it would be a very, very beautiful name. Even in the definition of the terms, I think is really quite beautiful. Anyway, now this is very interesting because I don't know about you, but I happen to love the Tour de France, but it's shrouded in COVID-19 uncertainty as teams gather for a start in the city of Nice. Already delayed, the Tour de France sets off on Saturday, shrouded in uncertainty. Flying in the face of the coronavirus pandemic and the imponderable question of how many of the 176 riders will avoid infection and endure three exceptionally tough weeks of racing to reach the finish in Paris. If the Rolling Roadshow gets that far, staging cycling premier race when COVID-19 infections are rising again in France represents both a health risk and an embodiment of French President Emmanuel Macron's insistence that the country must learn to function as normally as possible with the virus. Failure to safely steer the tour to the cobbles of Paris's Champs-Élysées Avenue on September 20 could cast further doubt on the feasibility of holding another sporting mega events or holding other sporting mega events, including the Tokyo Olympics, postponed for next year, while the coronavirus remains untamed. A key question posed by pushing ahead with a race will be whether it would have been wiser and safer to simply cancel it. Is a tour adding to the human community experience this year, or hurting it? That's what needs answering. Jonathan Walters, the boss of the EF Education First team, told the Associated Press. If we choose to take on the risk of living life, then I suppose we might have to take the risk of letting events go forward that makes life worth living, like the tour. Is that responsible for the community at large? I think there are many opinions, many, he says. Amid the pandemic, the usually boisterous celebration of cycling that for decades has drawn packed throngs of cheering roadside spectators promises to be a strange and more subdued affair. Moved for the first time in its 117-year history out of a traditional July slot to a September month when many fans will be back at school or at work after summer vacation. Riders who in more carefree times were habitually besieged by admirers congregating outside their team buses and in hotels are expected to be largely sealed off from the outside world, except while out on the roads. Organizers are beseeching spectators to wear face masks, but won't be able to prevent them from turning out to watch as riders speed through their towns and villages, starting in the Mediterranean city of Nice on Saturday. Masks will be obligatory for spectators at stage starts and finishes and have become mandatory outdoors in a growing number of cities and towns as French infection rates have ticked upward over the summer. If you love the tour, if you love the champions, wear a mask, race director Christian Prudhomme said, not only will this not be the year to collect an autograph, but you shouldn't ask for autographs or ask for selfies. The riders will say hello from afar. And that isn't to say they don't that they're not nice. All in all, it will be like Wimbledon. You don't get Roger Federer's autograph in the morning. So to try to keep the coronavirus from infecting the peloton of riders as it negotiates clockwise, 3,484 kilometer or 2,165-mile route, organizers aim to shield the 22 teams inside what they call a race bubble, opened only to riders and staff who have twice tested negative in the race run-up, including this week at a mobile laboratory in Nice. The tour's COVID-19 protocol, detailed in a 17-page document distributed to teams and obtained by the Associated Press, says that teams will be expelled if two of their riders or staff test positive for the virus or show strong symptoms of infection. Race organizers say that that scenario will be reserved only if two or more cases within a seven-day span take place. The threat of expulsion is making riders and managers even edgier than usual on the eve of the biggest event in cycling world calendar. They're anxious not only about the infection, but also about the reliability of virus testing. The German team, Bora Hansgrohe, is among those expressing concern after one of its riders first tested positive and then tested negative on Tuesday, prompting the withdrawal of the entire squad from the one-day Britannia Classic race. Bora team manager Ralph Denk appealed to immediate changes to cycling's testing regimen to combat false positives. We are talking about athletes who have been privileged and prepared for a race for weeks or months and then might not be allowed to start the event due to a false finding, she said. Or rather, he said. When tour teams arrived in Nice, some were surprised to discover that they were sharing their designated hotel with ordinary guests, raising doubts about how hermetically sealed the race bubble will be. As tour riders wearing face masks were presented to a thin crowd at the traditional pre-race unveiling in Nice on Thursday. The Lotto Soudal squad became the first to announce coronavirus exclusion. It said it was sending home two mechanics and two rider support staff. One of them tested positive on Wednesday. Another had what the team called a suspicious result. The other two staffers being sent home were their roommates. On top of COVID-19 concerns, riders will contend with one of the most unrelenting tour routes in memory. With an unusually high total of 29 tough climbs, they'll scale all five of France's mountain ranges, the Alps, Massif Central, the Pyrenees, and the Jura and the Vosges. Uphill slogs come as soon as stage two on Sunday, in a first for the race, with two ascents to 1,500 meters. That's 4,920 feet and higher. An uphill time trial on the penultimate stage for Paris will decide the standings among contenders chasing podium places and the winner's prize of 500,000 euros. That's $590,000. Defending champion Egan Bernal from Colombia is the only previous winner in a field stripped of four-time champion Chris Froome and 2018 victor Geraint Thomas, both omitted by Bernal's Ineos team, leaving him as its sole leader. The principal among Bernal's rivals could be Primoz Roglic, a Slovenian who finished fourth in 2018, and Tom Dumoulin, the Dutch runner-up that year, who is now Roglic's teammate at Jumbo-Visma. But with the pandemic having forced riders to train indoors on stationary bikes and with scant racing in this year of turmoil and tumult, the readiness of top contenders is one of many uncertainties in a tour unlike any other. So very, very compelling sort of stuff, that's for sure. Let me quickly go back to our studio screen. Bear with me a moment. And let's play a commercial for you. This is what's happening. Bear with me a second. Just want to make sure that we're not too loud here. Okay, this should be all right, but you never know. 1 second.
Hey, you a judge?
Sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio, Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championships?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge.
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show.
Cabot Rules.
The Stanley Cup.
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain big cheese company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Well, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do?
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
And I get to wear a yellow lab coat.
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot Cheddar.
Check.
Well, evidently record flooding has left dozens dead, thousands homeless in Sudan. Floodwaters in Sudan have reached the highest levels on record, killing dozens of people, destroying thousands of homes, and encroaching on some neighborhoods of the capital, Khartoum. Flooding comes despite Ethiopia starting to fill the reservoir behind a giant new dam upstream on the Gulf Nile in July. The Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, or GERD, G-E-R-D, is expected to help Sudan control future floods. Flooding regularly hits Sudan in summer. It this year's unprecedented water levels have left larger tracts of farmland submerged, and residents around Khartoum are looking anxiously outside their homes for fear of the rising waters. Well, floodwaters have spilled over into major roads in Khartoum for the first time in living memory. The roads or the waters of the Nile flooded our homes at midnight yesterday, said Ahmed Bastawi, a resident of Khartoum's twin city of Omdurman, who stayed up all night trying to protect the home, only to see some of his mud brick walls collapse. Well, we have never seen flooding like this. Authorities provide us with arguments, and so they say we have never seen flooding like this. Authorities provide us with the soil and sacks, but we failed to block the waters and the houses were destroyed. The average level of the Blue Nile has reached 17.43 meters, the highest since the country started measuring in 1912. Irrigation Minister Yasser Abbas said on Thursday. That's huge. Okay. As of Tuesday, the flooding had left 86 people dead, destroyed more than 18,000 homes, unbelievable, and damaged a further 32,000, according to the Interior. The reservoir behind the GERD is expected to be gradually filled over the next few years as the dam begins to operate, though Ethiopia is yet to agree on its operating terms with downstream countries Sudan and Egypt. So we'll just have to see where that goes. All right, let me just quickly look to see what else is going on. Bear with me a moment. And okay, let's just look at something else. Bear with me a moment. This is very frightening. Evidently, weather patterns have changed around the world. Dozens are dead as record rains lash out in Pakistan. Dozens of people have been killed in accidents and floods caused by torrential rains that have lashed Pakistan for days on end, officials said on Friday. Precipitation reached record levels in Karachi, the country's largest city, where waist-deep rivers of trash-strewn floodwater swept down streets and into homes and businesses. 18 people died in the southern city on Thursday in various rain-related incidents and accidents. Police spokesman and spokeswoman had said a record 230 millimeters of rain was recorded in Karachi, home to about 20 million people, compared to the average of 130 for the first time of the year. The city's meteorological service chief Safraz Ahmed had said in the mountains, northwestern province of the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, 16 people were killed in flash floods Friday with landslide damage to 67 homes and provincial disaster management authority Taimur Ali. Well, and in the eastern province of Punjab, local officials said four workers were killed when a warehouse and roof had collapsed on Thursday, or rather on Friday. The monsoon hit, which usually lasts from June to September, is essentially for irrigating crops and replenishing water supplies across the Indian subcontinent. But one-fifth of the world's position, or, you know, that's what I assume. It's going to be interesting because if they dig deep enough, they will get to the source of it. So we'll see who it goes. No idea, actually, about what else is happening there. So very, very intriguing. Okay, let me quickly look and see what else is happening on the scene. Bear with me a moment. Second. This is very interesting because I had not heard of this before. French President Macron has suspended a controversial glue trapping of birds. I didn't know they were doing this. Emmanuel Macron has put a temporary stop to a controversial practice of hunting thrushes and blackbirds by trapping them with glue smeared on sticks, the French president said on Thursday. Well, Macron decided to suspend the practice for the current fiscal season, pending a final decision from the European Court of Justice on the practice. Last year, there had been a court of 42,000 birds. In July, the European Commission urged France to re-examine the method of catching birds, which activists have called barbaric. So we'll just have to see where all that resides. Bear with me a moment. Want to move on to some other things that you may find interesting. Bear with me a second. All right, let's just see if we can pull this in. Bear with me. All right, bear with me a moment here. Okay. 1 second. All right, this looks like we've lost this thing here. But we'll see if we can grab this another way. 1 second. Okay, evidently I can't grab that for some reason. Okay, so let me just quickly look to see one other thing, and we'll see where we are. One moment. I think, to be honest with you, I think that we're going to have to say goodbye because we don't have any additional time slots figured out yet. And so we'll just have to wish you a great weekend, and hopefully you'll stay safe in your property, and you're good to people, and okay, I think that's going to be it for us today because I'm looking for other things and I just can't find it. Okay, so I think we're just simply going to say goodbye and thank you for being with us, and hopefully you'll join us on Monday. Take care and be well. Stay healthy. Bye.